I don't know. Moxie, why the hell did you go along with acting in a bad, offensive movie? You're too good for that. I understood there was another script, a good one. Mackenzie's, I guess. When I arrived in Naples, I understood Mackenzie was directing. Then things happened awfully fast. Mackenzie's wife was dead, Collar was directing. We were shooting the original script. The whole film company, the crew, were on location. My mind was taken up with where Freddie was. When was he going to get run over? What was I supposed to do, walk out? On my own friend, agent, manager, producer? Well, still. Fletch, remember the time I had a broken wrist in London? I never knew you had a broken wrist in London. I did. I was in the middle of filming The Face of Things. I broke my wrist. I was really blue. Stephen flew in from somewhere within a matter of hours, moved me into an even more expensive, more comfortable suite at the Montcalm, surrounded me with flowers, smoothed out all the contract nonsense, got a special removable cast rigged for my wrist, showed them all how we could continue filming even if I did have a broken wrist. You filmed The Face of Things with a broken wrist? About half of it. See it sometime. In about half the film, I don't use my left hand at all. And you're saying Peterman's doing all that was some kind of a favor?
Seemed so at the time.
How's your left wrist?
She wriggled it.
I have almost full use of it. Some favor.
I needed the money. A lot of people were able to keep working.
Yeah, well, you're really well off now. Peterman saw to that all right. Terrific guy.
Oh, Fletch.
Don't get angry with me.
Well, what's all this supposed to come down to? I'm a fool, I'm a murderer, and now I'm some kind of big gangster? Now I'm responsible for scrambling the brains of half the people in the country?
Not half.
Any people?
Tears rolled down Moxie's cheeks.
What good does all this do me? Next to me, Ava Brown looks like Madame Curie.
The phone rang twice. They ignored it.
Take it easy, Moxie. I'm just reporting that we're coming to some sort of an understanding of what happened. We know more than we did. You're just getting me in worse trouble. I'm an innocent person. I didn't kill anybody. I don't know anything about this business. I don't know anything about drugs.
Quietly, Fletch said, I think if Peterman were alive, I'd kill the son of a bitch.
Terrific, so I did, right?
You had plenty reason to.
Well, I didn't.
Leaning forward, she dried her tears on her linen jacket.
Here I am, sitting in this stupid house, crying my eyes out, people throwing rocks.
Cy Collar knows all about this funny money movie business. I've talked to him. I wonder to what extent he was in on all this. He knew Peterman and Buckley were in some sort of a deal together.
Go get Cy Collar arrested. He can direct his own execution. That way it'll never come off.
There was a knock on the door. Lopez was in the corridor.
Chief.
Natchman?
The police on the phone. She says she must speak to you.
Okay, I'll take the call downstairs. In the bedroom, Moxie had gotten up from her chair and clicked on the television set. Noon weather was being reported. The report was that it was a nice day. Collar had just climbed the stairs. He was a little out of breath. His black T-shirt was more than usually strained. In the corridor, Fletch said to him,
Cy, that story you told me the other night. Was it last night? About that fight you and Peterman had?
Collar was looking with big eyes at Fletch from close-up. Fletch could smell the liquor on his breath.
You said Peterman was putting up phony movies and pocketing the money he raised, but you knew he was actually concealing the movement of drug money around the world, right?
Collar raised his hand as if to grab something at eye level. That's how I had him by the short hairs. Collar lumbered down the corridor toward his room.
Cy, you knew Midsummer Night's Madness was never going to be released.
At his door, Collar turned around. Anything for a job, boy. Anything for a week's pay. He closed the door behind him. Chapter 34.
And how's the weather on Bonita Beach now? Fletch said into the phone. Still photogenic?
I'm not in Fort Myers, Chief of Detectives Roz Natchman said. I'm at the airport in Key West, and I put my last coin into the phone box waiting for you to pick up the phone.
Sorry, catching the noon weather report on television.
I'm waiting to be picked up by the local force.
They've had a busy morning, up early, rousting the citizens.
I called you earlier before I left the office, but someone insisted you weren't there.
I was helping the police on an underground matter. You have news?
Just keep everybody at the house until I arrive, please.
What's your news?
If everybody isn't there when I arrive, I'll hold you responsible, Mr. Fletcher.
Did Steve Peterman rent a car before he rented the car you examined?
Natchman paused.
Yes, an identical blue Cadillac, from another company. The day of the accident, he turned one car in at the airport, leaving it in the parking lot, and rented another one.
And was the first car damaged?
Yes.
Had it been in a hit-and-run accident?
Yes. Blood, bits of cloth beneath the front fender. The fender itself had been washed off.
The blood match?
We're presuming it does. We'll know soon. Oh, there's a police car. I'd better go outside so they'll see me.
Don't let anybody leave, Fletcher. We'll be glad to see you, Chief. At least I will. Chapter 35.
Upstairs, Fletcher went back into the bedroom and closed the door. The television was still running softly. On a woman's talk show, herpes was being discussed. Fletch sat in the double-width chair with Moxie. He took her hand.
Natchman is on her way over from the airport, Fletch said, to arrest Jeffrey McKenzie for the murder of Stephen Peterman.
The television was telling women not to feel badly about having herpes.
Peterman killed McKenzie's wife, Fletch said. Ran her down with a rented blue Cadillac.
Again, tears were rolling down Moxie's cheeks.
You see, Fletch said, Collar was right. McKenzie did know how to rig a set.
Moxie freed her hand. She stood up. She walked to the bed and sat on its edge. She sobbed. Fletch grabbed a tissue from the bedside table and handed it to her.
I'd think you'd be relieved.
Poor Jeff.
She blew her nose.
Poor damn Jeff. Why did they have to find out?
She began to choke. She went into the bathroom. She closed the door.
Fletch listened to her sobbing and blowing her nose and sobbing some more. I'll be downstairs, he said to the closed door.
Chapter 36. Mrs. Lopez opened the front door of the blue house when the police arrived. Fletch was in the living room within sight of the front door. He had walked around the house seeing where everyone was. Chief of Detectives Roz Natchman entered. Sergeant Hennings was behind her. Fletch shook hands with them.
McKenzie is in the small library at the back of the house, trying to arrange a flight to Sydney.
Natchman said, Good.
Having a busy day, Sergeant.
Busier than some.
Moxie came down the stairs. She had put on the white linen trousers and the sandals Fletch had brought her. Obviously, she had washed her face with cold water, but her eyes still showed she'd been crying.
Hello, Chief, she said.
Chief Natchman went to her.
You have the right to remain silent.
What?
Fletch yelled.
Will you please allow me to finish reciting this lady her rights?
You're arresting Moxie?
If you'd stop making so much noise.
But you can't.
I can, I should, I must. I'm arresting Ms. Moxie Mooney for the murder of Stephen Peterman.
Frederick Mooney stood in the living room door. His eyes were hollow, empty.
Jeff McKenzie killed Peterman, Fletch exclaimed.
He looked around. McKenzie was standing down the corridor outside the billiard room door.
Peterman killed McKenzie's wife.
Sorry, Mr. McKenzie, Natchman said. You didn't know that before, did you?
In the shadow of the deep corridor, Mackenzie's ruddy complexion paled. Of course he knew it, insisted Fletch. He wasn't even on location that day, Mr. Fletcher. Not in the afternoon. He was in Miami seeing lawyers. I saw him at the police station. He was at the police station, yes. He heard the news on the car radio and came directly to the police station. He was not on location.
He rigged the set.
The set was not rigged, said Natchman. So say the experts.
God,
Fletch said. Natchman fully recited Moxie Mooney her rights. To Fletch it sounded like the mumblings over a grave. Staring at Natchman, Moxie's eyes were glazed. Mrs. Lopez's face was long. In the living room doorway, Mooney swayed stupidly. Down the corridor, Mackenzie was leaning against a table.
What evidence? Fletch asked lamely.
Cut it out, Fletcher, Natchman said as if admonishing a child. All the evidence in the world. Motive? We've had a report on her financial records. Whatever swindles Moxie and Peterman were pulling, it had certainly gone sour for Moxie. Opportunity? She was on the stage with him. She was wearing a bulky bathrobe in which a knife could be easily concealed. She crossed behind him just as he was stabbed. Dan Buckley was also on the stage, but there was no way he could have concealed that knife in his clothes, and he never left his chair. Motive and opportunity make the case. Silently, looking as if he were going someplace to be sick, Frederick Mooney crossed the front hall to the stairs. His fingers just barely touched Moxie's sleeve. Her eyes watched him climb the stairs. Sergeant Hennings released handcuffs from his belt. He said to Fletch,
Okay if I arrest her? She's talented and famous.
It's not okay, Fletch shouted. No handcuffs!
Sorry, miss, Hennings said to Moxie. Police department rules.
Don't I get to get my toothbrush? Moxie asked.
We supply toothbrushes now, Natchman said, especially for capital offenses.
Moxie held out her wrists. Moxie Mooney was looking drawn and haggard. She smiled at Fletch.
What's your line about bravery?
Fletch answered numbly, Bravery is something you have to think you have to have it.
Yeah, Moxie said. I'll think on that.
I'm going with you, Fletch said.
Roz Natchman said, Sorry, Earwig, you're not. Not enough room in the helicopter.
Sergeant Hennings was guiding Moxie through the front door, gently by her elbow. Moxie was looking back at Fletch.
Hey, Fletch, she asked. You've never told me. Here's your chance. Why is this house called the Blue House?
Natchman put her nose up at the corners of the ceilings.
Used to be a whorehouse, she said.
Really? Fletch said. I never knew that. In the front hall, Fletch turned in a complete circle. Mackenzie approached. Bitterly, he said to Fletch, Thanks, mate. Then he went up the stairs. From the front porch of the Blue House, Fletch watched them put Moxie in the police car. Chief of Detectives Roz Natchman got in the back seat with her. He watched the car drive off. He stared at where the car had been. Moxie, fun and games, so many images of Moxie, on this beach and that beach, in the street, in the classroom, in little theaters, in this room and that, getting into the back of a police car in handcuffs. Behind him, Mrs. Lopez said, Can I get you something, Mr. Fletcher? Maybe a drink. He said, Apple juice. She said, We don't have apple juice.
You don't?
He turned to her.
We never have apple juice. Why have apple juice in the land of orange juice?
Fletch stared at her.
I think I can make you a nice rum drink with orange juice.
Excuse me. Fletch went by her and up the stairs. Chapter 37. Fletch knocked on Frederick Mooney's bedroom door and entered without waiting to be invited. Mooney was sitting in a Morris chair, his hands in his lap. Silently, he watched Fletch.
"How long you been sober?" Fletch asked. "Over 3 years."
The airline's flight bag was on the floor beside the bed. Fletch hunkered down next to it. He lifted one of the bottles from it. He uncapped the bottle and sniffed the contents.
"You can't get apple juice in most bars," Mooney said.
Fletch left the bottle on the bureau.
"You're one hell of an actor."
"I thought you knew that."
Mooney shifted in his chair.
"Of course I had the advantage. Once people think of you as a drunk, they see you as a drunk."
"Moxie said you were drunk when she arrived at her apartment in New York."
"I had set the stage, knowing she'd show up sometime. Empty bottles around, dirty, smelly glasses."
"But why?"
"I wanted to see her, as it were, without being seen. She would have shut off the reformed Frederick Mooney. I had shut her off too many years. Her behavior would have been cool and proper in front of the great man, her father. I decided the best way to see her, to really see her, get to know her, was as a dependent. In front of a helpless old man, blind, drunk, Marilyn was herself. I've really gotten to know her the last few weeks. She's really quite marvelous."
"But she hasn't gotten to know you."
"It doesn't matter," said Frederick Mooney. "It's all on film."
"So at the apartment in New York, you heard everything. Everything about Peterman."
"Of course. I even read Midsummer Night's Madness one afternoon while she was out. I knew the fiddle was on. You see, Fletch..."
Fletch, in continued shock, glanced at the man. He could not get his mind around the dimensions of this man's acting genius. All that Peterman, Peterkin, Peterson, Patterson routine had been consciously created.
"In my 20s, I was virtually ruined by one of these charlatan friend managers. The word friend italicized. I was dragged through courts for 5 years. Someone I had trusted. It virtually ruined my work, my sleep, my health. One is made to feel so vulnerable, so weak. And doing creative work while being made to feel weak and vulnerable is immensely hard, mind-breaking. Creative people should receive some protection by law. There really aren't that many of us, and our time is short. Our energy is limited. Our energy should not be drained by lawyers playing at their paper games. Something similar happened to me again in my late 30s. If I had known then what I know now, that energies do not last forever, I would have killed anyone who so assaulted me."
"Instead, you killed Steve Peterman."
"I haven't been able to do much for Moxie as a father. I didn't want her to be dragged through the courts for years, humiliated, made a fool, her life and work laid out in little boxes, her every privacy invaded. Preventing all that was something I could do for her."
"How did you do it?"
"I'm an actor, a well-trained actor."
"You know how to ride a horse like a guardsman and an Indian, how to handle a gun as if it were a natural extension of your hand."
"You heard that little sermon I gave at Dirty Harry's?"
Mooney's eyes wandered over the palm trees outside the windows. "Always used to go over well at colleges."
"Downstairs just now," Fletch said, "when they were carting Moxie away, I remembered her telling me years ago that as a kid in the carnivals, whatever, small-town traveling shows, you were even a part of a knife-throwing act. That was just after I realized I'd seen 3 empty apple juice bottles in the rubbish."
"You'd be surprised how your youthful physical skills come back to you after you've become absolutely teetotal."
Mooney smiled.
"I was never the drinker I was made out to be anyway. I cultivated the image. I could heighten the audience's suspense by making them wonder if I was too drunk to go on, too drunk to finish the play. I believe Keane used the same trick. There's old Mooney, drunk again. It can't be him who's acting so beautifully, but some god acting through him. You see, everyone had seen Hamlet before, knew the story. They had to be made unsure as to whether Mooney could play Hamlet. Again, and again, and again. Believe me, friend and lover of my daughter, no one could do what I've done as drunk as I'm supposed to have been. Of course I didn't make 20 or 30 pictures without knowing what I was doing. People will believe anything.
Mr. Mooney, how did you actually commit the murder? There were cameras everywhere.
I made myself into a rubbish man. A few rags, more hair, more beard. A discouraged way of standing, walking, wandering around location, picking up the odd candy wrapper, a cigarette pack. He chuckled. Edith Howell asked me to move a trash barrel away from her trailer. Didn't ask. Commanded me. Called me a lazy old lout when I moved slowly on my supposedly sore feet. Not a very nice lady, Edith Howell.
She has her eyes on your millions.
She was always looking the wrong direction on stage, too. She'd look a meter more upstage than she was supposed to be looking, a meter more downstage. That woman drove me nuts all during Time, Gentlemen, Time.
And have you millions of dollars?
Sure. Many millions? Why not? I've practiced a rewarding profession, worked hard all my life, and been well paid for it. Never had expensive tastes. One hotel room is very much like another.
Oh, Moxie thinks you're broke.
It's been good for her soul to think so.
Fletch sighed.
So, Mooney continued, as an old, tolerated member of the custodial staff, I even watched them build the set for the Dan Buckley show. You think I don't know how to work out camera angles? I approached the slit curtain at the back of the set from all the way down the beach, from the water's edge. I had to walk in a very carefully worked out Z. I never showed up on film. And thankfully there wasn't much breeze. The curtain stayed more or less still.
Why did you throw the knife into Peterman's back just after Moxie walked behind him?
Did I? I didn't know that. I wasn't watching, you see. I couldn't without being seen. I threw the knife at exactly that moment the breeze split the curtain.
And then walked in a Z back to the water's edge.
Yes. And by the time you found me in that bar, I'd been doing my drunk act for a good 2 hours or more. And I'd convinced the bartender that I was drunk when I arrived.
And no one thought you capable of such a thing.
Not even you.
And how did you get on and off location so easily?
After all, said Frederick Mooney, I am Frederick Mooney.
Yeah, I've heard.
Making me stop and identify myself, sign in, sign out, really. Not all the rules have to apply to me, you know.
Fletch shook his head and chuckled.
There's a big black dog named Emperor who goes in and out of Dirty Harry's. I went back the next night. I had thought it was something you had seen instead of a pink elephant. Fletch. It is all right if I call you Fletch, isn't it?
I don't know. I was getting sort of used to Peterkin.
Would you mind having a drink with me?
Are you serious?
In that flight bag there's another bottle, the real stuff. There are two glasses in the bathroom.
Sure.
When he was done pouring the drinks, Fletch left that bottle on the bureau, too. He handed one glass to Mooney.
Here's to you, Mr. Mooney. It's real interesting knowing you.
Here's to you, Mr. Fletcher. You tried your best, I think.
After the cognac cleared in Fletcher's throat, he asked, Did you mean to get away with it?
No.
Mooney seemed quite certain on that point.
Of course I expected to be found out.
Then why did you commit such a clever crime?
I like doing things well. Furthermore, puzzling everyone has given me a little more time with Marilyn. Not much.
What did you expect to do once you were found out?
Fade into the background, Fletch, fade into the background. Disguise myself as a pink-kneed, short-pants tourist, or an aged beach bum, or a bewhiskered priest, and slither into the common human pool. I rather fancied retirement for myself in some out-of-the-way place within walking distance of a good, warm, friendly pub, where people care not for theatre or films.
You can't do that now. They've arrested Moxie.
I couldn't do that anyway now, you bastard.
Mooney grinned ruefully.
You ruined that. You put me on an airplane and landed me on a spit of sand at the end of the world. There's no way off Key West for Frederick Mooney. Frederick Mooney couldn't charter a boat or a plane out of Key West disguised as a bedbug. Such people look too closely at you. The first night I was here, I went out to investigate, and found there was no way off this damn place for me. I walked so much I got so tired. I went into a bar and did my drunk act. Had the cops drive me home. One road out of here, and Edith Howell has told me all about those bridges between here and the mainland.
Affection was in Mooney's look and his chuckle.
You bastard.
Sorry. Do you know Peterman killed Mackenzie's wife? Ran her down with a car?
Doesn't surprise me. He was wrecking a lot of people and would wreck many more.
What was this all about, a drug scam?
Yeah.
Well, said Mooney, when the corner candy and newspaper store isn't selling candy and newspapers, you know it must be in some other business. Fletch put his empty glass on the bureau.
Guess you and I have to fly back to Fort Myers together.
Mooney said, we don't want to keep Marilyn under duress too long.
By the way, Fletch asked, why didn't you come clean downstairs before they took her away?
Would you believe I was stunned? I'd heard so many murder theories floating around, I thought we had plenty more time to be together. I didn't know that Moxie had crossed behind Peterman. Truly stunned. I couldn't think how to handle it downstairs. Here I had successfully passed myself off as a sick old man. What was I supposed to say? I'm sober and I did it? Moxie would have said, oh, hell.
Oh, hell?
It will take them a moment to believe this one. The curtains will have to close and the lights will have to come up. Young man, I know my audience.
Fletch said, I'll go phone around to charter a plane.
Mooney's empty glass was on the armrest of his chair. His fingers were folded in his lap. At the door, Fletch said,
one more question, Mr. Mooney. When you and I first met in that bar on the beach, you told me that Moxie, Marilyn, might have murdered someone, a teacher, a drama coach, when she was 14.
Mooney nodded.
Why did you tell me that, if you knew she hadn't killed Peterman?
To keep suspicion, particularly your suspicion, away from me. I knew Marilyn had sent for you. I knew who you are, an old friend and lover of Marilyn's. I knew it would be most difficult for you to believe Marilyn guilty of murder. I made it easier for you. I planted a doubt in your mind.
You blinded me, Fletch said. I haven't thought straight since.
Fletch's hand was on the doorknob.
Was it true about the story? Anything?
Did you ask Marilyn about it?
Yes.
And did she assure you she did not kill Mr. Hodes?
No, she didn't.
Ah, that Marilyn.
Smiling, Mooney shook his head.
She sure knows how to keep an audience.
Chapter 38. It took Fletch longer than he expected to charter a plane to Fort Myers. He finally found a charter service in Miami willing to fly down to Key West to pick them up. It would be a while before the plane arrived. Going back into the front hall, Fletch saw through the open front door that Jeffrey Mackenzie was in the street putting his luggage into the small yellow car. A dozen or so people were watching the house from across the street. Fletch went out to the sidewalk. He stood quietly a moment. Then he said to Mackenzie, I'm sorry everything has worked out so rotten for you. A garbage truck went by. Painted on its side was We Cater Weddings. His head in the trunk, Mackenzie said, every time us Aussies leave Australia, we get used as cannon fodder.
History doesn't say so.
Mackenzie slammed the trunk.
You won't see this lad on these shores again,